This is the McNuttcast for Friday, March 20th, 2009. On our inaugural show, a special feature-length conversation in honor of tonight's series finale of Battlestar Galactica.
This is Miles McNutt from Cultural Learnings.
And this is Ryan McNutt from McNutt Against the Music. And welcome to our first episode of the McNuttcast. You may know Miles from his blog. You may know me from my blog. And you may read both our blogs. But this project is something that Miles and I have been discussing probably for quite a few months now. And just we haven't really gotten off our butts to put it together yet.
They have remained ruminations.
I mean, you know, in my part, it's that as my life gets busy, I find that getting to blog about everything I want to talk about gets difficult. Miles doesn't have that problem nearly as much.
But, no.
There's just so much going on in the pop culture world to talk about. So what we're hoping to do with this weekly half-hour show is provide a bit of commentary on the week's most interesting or newsworthy stories in film, television, music, and gaming. In addition to kind of covering off those fields, each episode is going to have a longer feature discussion on some subject that warrants a bit more analysis from us. So that's the way most shows are going to work. This show is going to be a little bit different because what inspired us to get off our butts and finally start this is that tonight Battlestar Galactica comes to an end. Miles and I are both big fans of the show. And we thought it was a good chance to kind of explore what the show has meant to television and science fiction over the past several years in sort of a longer format. So this is going to be the exception, not the rule, but it's a pretty cool exception to start off on. Anything else to add before we begin, Miles?
I'd call it a pretty fracking cool exception personally, but that's just me.
All right. So let's take it away.
This podcast shouldn't exist, in a way. A reboot of a 70s property shouldn't have worked at all, and the result shouldn't have been a compelling piece of contemporary science fiction with philosophical meaning or real-world implications. But somewhere along the journey to Earth, Ronald D. Moore tapped into something. The question we ask today is really quite simple. What the frack precisely was it that Moore tapped into and that makes this series so special? Just as a spoiler warning, we will be discussing details of the show up till last week's episode, the first part of Daybreak, so if you have not seen these episodes, it is strongly, strongly advised that you go watch them immediately and then come back and listen to the podcast. So there's your spoiler warning. Let's join the show in progress. To kind of start this off as kind of an opening question, when for you was the moment when you realized that, you know, beyond the hype, that Galactica really was doing something different?
I actually was kind of, I wouldn't say I was let down, but after the hype, I wasn't that impressed by the miniseries. I thought it was a good start to the show, but it didn't really blow me away. But I was quite partial to the first episode, the first proper episode, 33. And the idea of the show is that, you know, they have essentially every 33 minutes, the Cylons are catching up to them, and they have to jump to another area of space. And they get found every single time. And they go through something ridiculous like 230 jumps. And they eventually realize that it may be a civilian ship that has possibly have Cylons on it that is tracking them. And so they've got to make a decision whether or not to destroy this civilian ship. And what struck me about it was how it reminded me of when growing up watching Star Trek The Next Generation at its best. Because it felt like it was a gimmick episode, but they didn't just use the gimmick for plot's sake. It was using the gimmick to say something about the circumstances they were in and the way in which these characters are making decisions about it. And so I thought, okay, that is good. But the moment I think Battlestar, for me, jumped from really good show to undoubtedly one of the best shows on television is definitely the Pegasus story arc in season two. And so much of the first 2 years of the show, or first two seasons, are really about this tension between security and democracy in the face of an existential threat, the Cylons. And it's through that tension, sort of embodied in, Rosalyn and Adama on the two different sides, that holds the society together. With the Pegasus, you have a ship that never had a civilian fleet, never had to deal with those same questions. And so it's a brilliant storytelling technique to bring that ship into this world, because it's the show posing its own counterfactual question. What if these debates that Rosalyn and Adama had hadn't been there? What if this society had chosen to confront the Cylon threat with purely military modes of thinking and with military action only? And what the result is it's horrid, it's disgusting, and it's some of the most truly shocking and provocative scenes the show in its entire 4 years ever put to the audience. And I thought it was ballsy, it was brave, and it is just some of the most it's probably close to filmmaking. It doesn't even feel like television. The story arc was so good.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things about the show, the way it can transcend normal television principles and move into more of a cinematic realm. And I think Pegasus was a good sign of that. But I guess for me, I go a little bit earlier, because one of the things the show is known for is disrupting the status quo, creating these conflicts. And then at first, especially after the end of the first season with Kobol's Last Gleaming, you had this huge disruption, Adama being shot. And then it was kind of, where do you take this fleet completely divided? How do you bring it back together? How do you resolve those conflicts? And in Home, the two-part episode that actually David Icke wrote, I found it really interesting in terms of the way it, in resolving things, technically taking us back to where we were before, the ramifications of that. It wasn't just a simple conclusion, just go back to where they were and keep moving. There were some fundamental differences that we saw in this reunion of sorts. And yes, in the span of Home, as they go down to Kobol and find a new pathway or on the way to Earth, and they go down that path, you see those kinds of things happen. And it's like, oh, it's just resolving itself. But then you realize that in doing so, that's when Sharon is introduced into the fleet. This whole new ape model, as they're coming to terms with Boomer having shot Adama, all of a sudden he's face to face with this other ape model. And the way those implications started working themselves into the series there, you realize that Boomer might be dead, but these things aren't going to change. You're going to see more and more that you're going to see new things and new kind of dynamics. It's not just all going to get swept under the rug. And that's when I started to view it as this continuum, this idea of these characters constantly changing, the dynamics constantly shifting. And as long as that would keep happening, I could tell the series was going to be able to go on and do arcs like the Pegasus and have huge ramifications after the fact of the way it deals with the fleet dynamics and eventually moving forward to New Caprica. It's a pattern that they'd seem to start, but the way they resolved that was one of the most fundamental things, with a resolution and not a resolution. And I think that's why I was always really fascinated by that, and why Home really stuck with me for my thesis and when I ever ruminate on the show. So I think I remember after that moment where I decided that I really liked the show, it's my big episodes really come in the next season or so. That, in the rest of season two and season three, those are the episodes I think that really stuck with me. And I guess I want to start off with one really quickly, which is actually the episode directly after Home, which is Final Cut, which many people apparently don't like this episode, but
for me,
I know they're very wrong. One of the things that always strikes me about it is that, Kat and Gaeta and Dwala didn't have first names before this episode. They weren't characters. They were background players. They were glorified extras. And if you look forward to the rest of the series, what Kat became, what Gaeta became, what Dwala became, especially going into the fourth season with the last two, all of them have played a substantial role in expanding the purpose of the series and the goal of the series to these smaller players. How does it affect them? How does it impact them? Those kinds of things are, to me, really important to the Battlestar experience, getting all these different characters in play. And without that episode, I don't think that was there. The heroism was too isolated in main characters. And to me, Final Cut really opened things up, and for that gesture alone, it was pretty powerful.
I think it was also a good demonstration of how good Battlestar was at playing with formula and trying to use different perspectives and different, I guess for lack of a better term, just like I did with 33, we'll call them gimmicks.
That's true.
Battlestar had a lot of episodes based around a gimmick, and yet they more of them worked, far more worked, I'd say, than didn't. And that says a lot about the quality of both their writing crew and their directing talent, that they're able to take an episode based around an idea like let's have a documentary about Battlestar
Yeah.
within the show. That could be really, really bad. And well, I guess I was about to say I respect those who disagree, but I don't. It's a terrible opinion. The episode is fantastic and it introduces us to a new Cylon, a whole new, and like you said, it gives us a new perspective on these characters and on this ship that makes it feel more real and alive.
Exactly.
All right. It's funny. I was looking at what we were thinking about talking for our favorite episodes, and you kind of gravitate towards kind of the more unique standalone episodes, which is great. For me, Battlestar was great because it not only was able to pull those off, but it hit the big mythological beats. When it had to do a big episode, a series finale, or an episode like Home, it usually knocked them out of the park.
Yeah.
And I've got, out of all those, I've got to say my personal favorite is the second season finale, Lay Down Your Burdens. And it's great for a couple of reasons. One of which is that the show makes, in my opinion, its gutsiest decision, which is the decision to land on New Caprica and leap forward in time.
My jaw dropped, like flat out.
My jaw dropped, and it worried the hell out of me
It's true.
because I grew up, not grew up, but a few years ago, I was a big fan of J.J. Abrams' Alias. And at the end of its second season, it made the exact same decision to
Yeah.
jump ahead in time. And when I saw that finale, season finale on Alias, I was so excited because it's like a clean slate. You have a chance to rewrite the show now, to ask any new questions you want, deal with any new mysteries. You just create a blank slate.
Oh,
And I
how naive
was
we were.
exactly, I was cr soul crushingly disappointed by how quickly the show went back to its old formula and really didn't have a chance to deal with it. And so maybe for me, Lay Down Your Burdens matters also in relation to the New Caprica story arc that followed in the first four episodes of season three,
Yes.
and beyond, arguably, because I thought they actually did what I wanted the show to do. It presented a new scenario for our characters with new implications, and it actually addressed them, not only in terms of entertainment value, but the larger themes of the show. So, but even independent of that, where Lay Down Your Burdens took the show, independent of itself, it's one of the most fascinating episodes for how far it pushes Rosalind. Because, the dynamic in the show had threatened to grow stale between Adama as, military authoritarian and Rosalind as democracy advocate. And she gets pushed to her brink in this episode by the fact that Baltar could be president and completely willing to steal an election. And it demonstrated to me that no character in this world is morally above anyone else. Everyone else, when self-interest comes into play, can show an ugly side. And I think they absolutely hit a home run with that story.
Definitely. And I think, for me, one of the other episodes that stands out in terms of creating those expectations and defying them in a way is Downloaded, which is the introduction of the Cylon narrative. And I've actually heard of people who don't like this episode, who are convinced in some way that Downloaded sent Battlestar down this wayward path where the Cylons were no longer evil killing machines. And that argument fascinates me because the show would be nothing if we didn't see parallels between human and Cylon, if their paths weren't in some way intertwined. And I look now into the fourth season, and I can't imagine trying to disconnect those terms, trying to dehumanize the Cylons all over again, because Downloaded showed that many of the same moral quandaries you're discussing in terms of Rosalind and Adama, those all existed for the Cylons too. That those processes were operating the same way, that Caprica 6 was seeing ahead Baltar just as Baltar was seeing ahead 6. And those parallels could have been really cheap. They could have been really cute. It could have been this kind of, hey, look, Cylons are all like humans. But that episode hit to the core of some of the values the series was dealing with, values of morality, values of responsibility that in many ways the humans hadn't even dealt with yet. That in many ways, they didn't even really deal with until Lee's speech in Crossroads in season 3.
I think the idea of Cylons being more human than we thought they were was always in the show from the very beginning. And I think they had the guts to take it to its full extent as they started doing and downloaded is one of the reasons why I think the show is far more interesting than a lot of its peers.
That's true.
I want to extend on something you hinted at there. I want to talk about Crossroads Part 2 because it's an episode that actually didn't impress me as much as most people the first time I watched it. I found some of the pacing weird. I was bothered by the theatricality of Lee's speech within in Baltar's trial. But I was also bothered by just how obvious it was who the Cylons were. The episode was telegraphing that reveal way too obvious, I thought. But once I got over those initial reactions and I went back and rewatched it, it is an amazingly well-structured hour of television, the second part. Maybe the most beat-for-beat, best edited and sequenced episode of the show. Everything clicks. Lee's speech, what I thought was theatrical the second time, just felt like it was saying exactly what needed to be said. It felt like it got out on the table all the things that people had tried throughout season 3 to work out, because season 3 is really about what happens in those first 4 episodes on New Caprica, and then a whole season of coming to terms with that. And it might have been a bit too long answering some of those and dealing with some of that.
Yeah.
But I'm glad the show took the time, because I think it pays off in Lee's speech, where it finally gets out on the table, the final decision with regards to Baltar, and then you have the final 10 minutes of that episode, which just are absolutely riveting in every way, shape, and form. The final reveal of the Cylons, the use of All Along the Watchtower, the realization of the ships launching into space. I can't think of another sequence in the show where I was so on the edge of my seat.
No, and I think there's that kind of power to it. And I think a lot of that was dependent on what came before it. And for me, in the third season, the episode that kind of, I guess, stuck out was Unfinished Business, which, again, some people don't like, and again, I don't understand.
It's a fantastic episode. And again, it's a total gimmick episode, but an extremely well-done one that actually uses the gimmick to say something about these characters.
Well, no, exactly, because, you know, it's very similar to what's actually been done in the first part of the series finale, which is going back in flashbacks and showing us things that happened that were technically had happened before our narrative had been picked up, but we didn't really understand. They weren't necessary, but they really fleshed out some things. And when it comes to Rosalind Adama's conversation about, you know, marijuana in the cabin, and you start to see how those kinds of threads, those really small character moments in a moment of celebration that wouldn't have been enough to carry an episode on its own. Like, those scenes in New Caprica could have never been, like, part of the New Caprica arc. But going back to those peaceful days, finding those moments, the show is so good at doing that, and then juxtaposition with those visceral boxing scenes of Adama putting himself out there against Tyrell. It's just, there's so much blood to be kind of had there, and yet the series goes through it with such a really interesting perspective. It was an episode that really stuck with me after the fact, and with a lot of Battlestar episodes that people claim are standalone, I can understand how they might feel they don't really have much of an impact, but Unfinished Business fundamentally changed my view on the past, on New Caprica, how it affected these characters moving forward in the Crossroads, moving forward in the season 4, etc.
All right, cool. I want to talk about my ultimate favorite episode, Black Market.
Ah.
for those who aren't big on the show, as an inside joke, Black Market is kind of universally received as the worst episode of the show.
Ronald D. Moore hates that episode, flat out.
The creator of the show hates it. So, but I want to mention one last episode, and it's, for me, it's the highlight of season 4, the most recent one that's just concluding, and it's Someone to Watch Over Me, and it's the one that where episode involving Kara Thrace, her and the piano player who form a relationship in the bar. For me, Someone to Watch Over Me represents what Battlestar does best, which is you hit big notes, but you hit the small ones at the same time. So, you have this you have big story arcs going, about the theft of the child, to the base star, you know, Tyrell's complications, Hilo's confusion. All these big arcs are hitting, and then you have all these little moments with Kara and the piano player, and it all comes together. It hits the intimate and it hits the broad at the same time, and I think it's the undisputed highlight for me of this season.
And I think a lot of that has to do with Bear McCreary's music in the episode. Like, there's some really haunting stuff with the piano with Starbuck that really hits home how quasi-peaceful this all is, how they've accepted where they are, and how she's kind of awoken by this piano music. So, I mean, those are just kind of some of the episodes. Like, I could go on for hours and hours, but it's interesting to see, though, how we've tracked certain characters through, you know, and, like, you have Starbuck, you have all of those. So I guess, you know, for you, what were the character arcs that really kind of meant the most, if you will?
You know, I'm a big Gaius Baltar fan. And we can talk a little bit about season four in a while. Yeah. I'm not totally happy with where the character's gone. Yeah. But from season one to season three, I think he's the most, for me, the most interesting voice in the show, because he's completely self-interested, but almost never self-reliant. But he requires somebody else to tell him what to do at all points. Whether in most cases, of course, it's, you know, it's the version of Six in his head that the fans call Head Six.
Yes.
She really guides a lot of his decision making. You know, or he does it based out of fear because he's worried about being found out that he's colluding with Cylons or that he had colluded with them back on Earth. You know, he's at the mercy of the political process once he gets into it. And it's only fitting that it's under his presidency that the Cylons come in and take over. And once again, he's a man that takes orders. And yet, every time he does it, it's because he fears for his own survival. And, you know, he's the closest thing the show has to a villain. And yet, there's something likable. There's always something likable about him for everything you hate about him. And I think the show, it kind of reminds me of how Lost uses John Locke. The character makes the same mistakes over and over again, and yet they're so foundational to his character that it's always compelling to see a new angle on it.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, you know, just kind of to pick up on that idea of, you know, expectation and how they're supposed to react. I mean, Baltar's a good example of that, but we were talking earlier about Rosalyn and Adama and following them through. And, you know, they have perhaps been the most poignant of the stories, this love tale, this, you know, epic sort of connection. And what I've really liked about what the fourth season has done is place them in this peaceful kind of mode where they've both kind of gotten past their initial, as you were discussing, authoritarian versus, you know, peaceful school teacher perspectives. Rosalyn was supposed to have a shorter life expectancy. She was supposed to be short in both position and life. She was, like 43rd in line or something. Yet she was able to tap into her faith and saved by Hera's blood. All along the way, she's had this kind of element of faith kind of driving her. But then those things begin to erode away. Her health starts to fail. She starts to lose her faith, especially in the fourth season. And tracking that through with her cancer and those moments has been an incredibly powerful journey. And you expect that from the emotional school teacher, the one who's supposed to have that. But yet, it's not this, like, really simple how she learned a lesson. It's a real indie kind of personal tale. I find Adama is the same thing. I find that Adama, with his relationship with the Battlestar, with Ty, with this connection that he had, you know, he was stuck in a museum when this show started, and now he's become the glue that holds everything together, and he's the one who created the journey to Earth back in the miniseries without really any cause. He's never really believed, but he's had faith when he's needed to deal with Rosalyn, to deal with all of this. And it's just all the complexity, you know, came out in the mutiny this season. Just seeing what Adama was being held responsible for, what people were ignoring, the pain in him. All of that, Eddie James Olmos and Mary McDonnell, two absolutely amazing performers who brought to life two characters completely interconnected and so fundamental to the purposes of this series that I don't know if another sci-fi show could really deal with this kind of movement, deal with this kind of creation at such a fundamental level as with the three characters we've discussed.
Yeah, and if I want to talk about one more character whose arc I've really enjoyed, it's actually Lee Adama. Lee has been started off as a hotshot fighter pilot has matured into really the political leader of this fleet. And I think that arc is an interesting transition because in season three you see, well, for one, you see Fatley
Oh,
on
Fatley.
control of the ship, but you see the character, you know, grow disillusioned with the military world and start to break from his father, and start to ask questions about law and order and society that, under his previous role, he never had access to. And the more he asks those questions, the more he needs to break from the military model. So I think he kind of represents the slow transition of the show, from viewing the Cylons as a military threat to viewing them as something more complicated. I think he is the vehicle through which we really see that transition. So, the next topic I think we wanted to discuss, and you started on there, is season four.
Oh, season
You've
four.
had a lot to say about season four over at your blog. In a nutshell, what's your take on, I guess, both season 4.0 and 4.5?
I think the problem with 4.0 is that we kept building to something and building to something. We flew around in the Demetrius, and it seemed like the show was setting this idea of needing to establish this really down Starbucks go on the point of mental insanity. You could have everything going wrong, and then things explode. Cylon Civil War, and you have all these ideas. And the problem was that while the Cylon Civil War was interesting, it never really got off the ground. We never got to see it. We were seeing other things instead. So you expect the second half of the season to deal with that kind of slow start, really build up momentum. But they kind of went against what I felt when I was talking earlier about Home, was really what they did well, is that when you got to the mutiny, which in itself was an amazing story arc with some incredibly powerful moments and images, the ramifications of that were never clear. The ramifications of the connection between humans and Cylons were hinted at and played at in kind of broad ways, but we never really got a real subtle, focused episode because all of a sudden the show was rushed to try to cramp in everything in those final episodes. And it didn't feel natural anymore. The episodes didn't feel like they were really connecting in the way they should have. And I thought that while there was a few moments of genius, if you go back and look at the way things string together, there were important pieces missing, left out, cut out, characters completely cast aside, like Baltar. And in the end, the fourth season might actually be the worst season of the show, even if it concludes successfully, as we'll discuss in a few minutes.
Wow, tell us what you really think.
Yes. I
Yeah,
liked it.
I think it is the weakest season of the show, I think. I think that what frustrated me is that I felt the 4.0 moved too slow, and for the most part, 4.5 has moved too fast.
Which doesn't make sense.
Well, that's
Like,
the
they
thing, right? If it
could
was
have
one
planned
or the
that.
other, if it was going too slow or too fast, I'd be okay with it. But the fact that 4.0 took so much time trying to demonstrate the aimlessness of what was going on with Kara and her journey to find Earth again, and then to have, you know, the mutiny is probably the most significant internal event since Bartol's trial and maybe since New Caprica. New
Yeah.
Caprica had a whole season dealing with the implications. This had like half an episode roughly after the fact, talking
And
about what this mutiny meant, and I didn't buy it.
no.
And you know, I think nothing has ever, to me, explained that problem of speed better than how the Cylon backstory was explained.
Yeah.
You know, where we learn about it in when Sam Anders has a bullet in his brain, and it thinks he's going to die, and has all of a sudden it all starts flowing to him, and he just starts rambling off the entire history of the Cylon mythology, and it was the epitome of tell, don't show. And it felt like he was the other character was getting all this off his chest because he was running out of time,
Yeah.
and that's what the show felt like at that point.
Ooh.
And so I mean I feel like I've enjoyed the season. It's not a bad season. There's a couple big highlights. I think "A Disquiet Follows My Soul" is a great episode. I think
Absolutely.
"Someone to Watch Over Me" is the highlight of the season. But you know, you have an episode like "Deadlock," which I think is one of the worst in maybe the worst in the season and one of the worst in the show's history because it's. And to me, it's even more offensive than say Black Market. Black Market was basically just filling time.
It was in the
Deadlock
second
is
season. Who cares?
Right, and Deadlock is trying to do something significant and fails miserably.
Well, and I think even if we go back to 4.0, like, there's some great moments there with the hub and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, some really exciting, you know, emotional episodes and Revelations.
Revelations is one of the show's best. I think it's probably in the top 10, 15 episodes.
And so, I can pick out those moments and show that the trajectory of the season was in great shape. And I feel like they knew what they were doing. But it felt like stretching it out over 22 episodes kept them so they didn't want to move too fast, so they didn't get too far into it, so they had to step back or slow things down. But the process was that they got rushed, whether it was the writer's strike. I don't know what it was, but something didn't feel right, which left me with that, you know, sixth sense in my stomach that this series finale might not work, that where this ended up wouldn't meet our expectations. And that, like with that Alias finale you were discussing earlier, terrified me flat out. Now, I guess we have to ask ourselves the question moving into tonight's series finale. They have 2 hours. We've seen the first part of Daybreak. Are they going to be able to satisfactorily finish this series?
I think so. You know, there's a lot of shows that I've liked that have had their weakest year in the final year and ended on a strong note. The Wire is a great example of that.
Yes.
Fifth season is the weakest, but that final episode just hit it home. And I think the show benefits from the fact they've actually dealt with most of their mythology mysteries. You know, I have issues with how they handled Ellen as the final Cylon, but yeah, it's covered. You know, we've got most of the Cylon history. There really isn't much mythology left to explain outside of a couple questions that I'm sure we'll get to.
Yeah.
So I feel like the burden of plot is largely off this episode, and they have 2 hours with which to give me something satisfactory for these characters, more so than anything. So that's a cool opportunity, and I hope they take advantage of it.
Yeah, and I think it's because, to me, that's what it should be. That's what Morris said it should be. And I've seen some people complaining, saying, well, okay, we want plot, you know, characters shouldn't necessarily be elevated above that. But this show has always been about characters. Most of the episodes that we discussed involved plot, yes, but they involved that plot, like you said, intersecting with a character like Roslyn, intersecting with these other ideas. And the whole point of the show has been that, you know, things come full circle. What has happened before will happen again. Cara Thrace will lead the people. These questions of destiny and the opera house and the dying leader, all those things are not about plot. They're about character. They're about the people who are intertwined with them.
And I think there's really only two real mythological questions left. I think one of them is the opera house vision, which has always been there. That needs addressed. And what is Cara Thrace at this point?
Yeah.
I think those are really the only two beats they've yet to really provide a satisfactory final note for.
Yeah.
And so I don't think the show is too hard up to deal with them in the 2 hours they have.
No, and I feel like they're setting themselves up with the first part of Daybreak. We know I've seen some criticism saying the flashbacks are misguided, but the flashbacks give you the sense that these characters have been in some way destined to be here before. That something about their past lives, their relationships, have created these connections in ways that we haven't seen before, but we've presumed. Like between Lee and Kara, like between Roslyn and her family, why she values children and how these things happen. When you start to piece all those things together, I think you're getting that sense of wrapping things up.
You know, and the thing I'm intrigued by the finale is, you know, they've already announced that they do plan to have a, obviously the Caprica miniseries or follow-up is coming out. But beyond that, we don't really know what they planned to do. So that essentially leaves the fate of everyone open. I mean, everyone could die, hypothetically. I mean,
hypothetically,
we really don't know what these characters' endpoint is going to be, and I'm intrigued by that because, you know, so much of the show was about finding Earth, and the stuff I've liked about 4.5, even if it's taken a bit too long to get there, or in some ways, or too quickly in others, is the idea that what do you do after you find Earth and it's not there, and you know, this whole idea of finding a new home's been out there, but now Galactica's about to fall apart, so it leaves a lot of questions open as to where's the final point for these characters? What is their final destination in the show? And I don't know yet.
No, and I think I like that we don't know. I like that it's still a little bit unclear. That can be our epiphanic moment. We can figure this out, kind of piece it together. And that's what I want from this. I don't need every answer. I just need a sense of contentment with where Morris left this. If he gives me that, he is entirely forgiven for parts of, if not all of, season 4. just as a kind of a closing note, you know, there was just on Tuesday the Battlestar Galactica panel at the United Nations. And that's kind of one of those surreal things where you start to realize the way it interacted with our own world. And but then you realize that that's only one part of the equation. It wasn't just this cultural commentary. It was this in-depth character study, this philosophical kind of debate. And I think that's what makes it timeless, like you said, that it wasn't just trying to do one thing, live in one moment, be as culturally savvy as possible. It was trying to be savvy in every part of its identity, in all of those kinds of ideas. So that kind of collectivity of purpose has really, I believe, created a show for the ages. So say we all.
All right. Wow, we didn't even plan that. That was weird.
That was weird, but not surprising.
All right. So thank you guys for listening in. We'll be back next week with kind of, I guess, the start of our more traditional format for the McNutt cast. Once again, I'm Ryan McNutt of McNutt Against the Music.
And I'm Miles McNutt from Cultural Learnings.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Be able to find my review of tonight's series finale of Battlestar Galactica at culturallearnings.wordpress.com, and of course you can reach McNutt Against the Music at mcnutt.wordpress.com.